This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Now, we're still a bit stuck with our last guest here.
It's interesting. So this doctor, maybe you can sort of give us a bit of a general preamble about this.
Yes, let's go into the story here. And the story is that this is Mental Health Week, right? And I received a press release from Dr. Emil Djakic, who is head of the Australian General Practitioner Network. Now, as I mentioned earlier, they represent pretty well most GPs, most general practices, because nowadays, of course, people are in groups in general practices. He says here, during Mental Health Week, AGPN is reminding communities across Australia that the future of mental health services is changing as something called Medicare Locals start to embed locally driven, evidence-based services to improve the mental health and well-being of people across Australia. And depression and anxiety disorders are among the most common mental health problems and are also the most disabling. We agree about that.
Mm-hmm.
We know about that in this community. And we know also that GLBTI people suffer in general higher rates of depression and anxiety than the generality of the populace. So you would have thought that somewhere...
So there's a miss there, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, Well, you know, then he goes on to list all the sort of at-risk groups. And there, among the at-risk groups, we are not.
Right, okay.
And that's the reason why I particularly wanted to talk to the good doctor. I do believe we have him on the line now, finally. Good afternoon, Dr. Emil Djakic.
Yes, good afternoon. Sorry about my delay.
That's okay. We know you're a busy man. Now, I've just been explaining some of the background to the story. You sent me this press release about the General Practice Network, and in there you mentioned that there were certain high-risk groups for disorders like depression and anxiety, but you didn't mention gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgender and intersex. Everybody else got a look in, we didn't. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I think the whole of the population got a look in. Obviously, we hadn't broken it down into all of the groups that clearly see and have good reason to be putting their interests forward. So, you know, we don't deny the perspective you take that it hasn't been identified in isolation. But
you put in people affected by natural disasters, children, young people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. You know, you singled those out, but you didn't single us out. And this happens to us all too often, unfortunately. We tend to get overlooked.
Yeah, I guess, again, I recognise that you have a very good reason and very good position as an advocacy group to be putting your case forward. I think by the time we slice and dice the whole population, we'd eventually have everybody included in that list. There's not many people we get to leave out, and by no means are anybody necessarily being left out on any particular grounds.
You could just actually send out an amended press release and insert the group in. You could do that.
We've got more people.
Sorry.
Our team. Excellent.
You could do that.
That's Kath Pope, who's joined me in the studio today and helping me to co-host. Well, as I mentioned to you when we corresponded before the show, I've got a particular interest in mental health issues around young GLBTI people and GLBTI elders, and those two groups do suffer mental health problems at a higher rate than the rest of the population. Now, how will these Medicare locals make life easier for them?
Now, our intent with Medicare Locals is very much the whole of health, whole of population approach, particularly focused through what has been a general practice model. So looking at communities where needs can be identified, where there is unmet need, in looking at how that can be approached or how those communities can be directed to services that they may not be connecting with already, that that may exist. Or
okay,
how
can we just take one little step back here and explain to people what a Medicare local is? Is this a consortium of general practices? Is this a kind of one-stop shop so that you don't have to go to emergency rooms? What does it do?
No, Medicare local is not a clinical service delivery entity. It is an organisational service for primary health care in the community to allow service providers to have an umbrella organisation that they can report needs to in terms of service gaps, so that funding and programs from the federal government can then be targeted to those communities in a more organised and coordinated way than they currently are.
Doctor, can you just give us a practical example of what you're saying?
Well, it's an evolution of what we've had in the divisions of general practice program. So the best example we've used there has been the changes in immunisation rates in Australia in the last few years, where there was a well-recognised problem of underperformance. So a program coordinated through the divisions of general practice, through community health, through general practices and education, facilitated in partnership with government, okay, a dramatic increase.
So you get additional funding to run public campaigns and awareness campaigns around a specific problem that you're seeing come through surgery doors.
Yeah, well, surgery doors and
GP doors.
And now the broader perspective of looking at the whole of population. Yep. So in the situation with the community that you're advocating for, an ability to actually contact the representatives in a population or a town, or whether it be rural, urban or regional, that can find a way of having a dialogue with the primary healthcare coordination, because this is really the big issue with mental health that we see in terms of people finding the on-the-ground services in their community that they can go to that's going to be aware of their needs, whether they be young, old or Indigenous, or again, as you're representing from your perspective.
And what kind of training is available for GPs in terms of engaging with the GLBTI community? So what kind of you know, I might be 16, I might go to my doctor, I might be suffering from mental health issues as a result of my sexual orientation that I'm beginning to acknowledge. What kind of training do those doctors have in a non-judgmental way of engaging with that patient?
General practice, and again, the term is meant to be all encompassing. So we are looking at whole of healthcare. So cradle to grave, whether someone has a different sexual orientation or not. So it's included in the training of our students, registrars, and subsequent ongoing reading. So the patient that comes through the door, and I am a GP in practice as well. The person that sits down in front of me is a whole person. I don't identify them as necessarily being aged or a subgroup, but clearly look at their problems and work with their problems.
But the thing is, Doctor, there are certain specific needs of certain specific populations, whether they're non-English speaking, whether they're gay, whether they're, whatever they might be. I'm just wondering how much time is spent, as a proportion roughly, sort of dealing with issues that are specific to these particular communities.
Yeah, I haven't got a figure to represent proportions, but I can only advocate that the training programs or ongoing education is spread across the myriad of competing interests that are on my desk, whether they be from social equity and health, or heart disease, or mental health, or surgically. So we have a constant rolling educational agenda that goes with all of general practitioners, and within that, the gay issues are part of those competing interests as well.
Well, as a gatekeeper, which is what GPs are for a lot of services, there must be an awful lot of things you need to cover.
We have the most challenging profession and most rewarding one, I think. But
let's hope today's conversations move the GLBTI thing a little closer to the top of the pile that's sitting on your desk.
And I think your advocacy is terrific and well worthwhile, and is clearly going to be heard, and that's the role of interest groups, and of many of which come knocking on the door. And in the new environment with Medicare locals, and I've seen it already in my own state in Tasmania, we have interest groups clearly with a good cause now coming to them saying, hey, we exist. Yep. And we would like to work out how can we relate to you. And that's a really exciting thing.
Well, we're going to have to cut it off there, Doctor. Thank you very much for your time this
Lovely,
afternoon.
Lovely, thank you
very much. That was Dr. Emil Djakic there from the Australian General Practitioner.
Do you reckon we'll get an amended press release?
Who knows? We'll be back in a second.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.